Hey, what's going on, everybody? It's John, Bam Bam the Dog. First, on behalf of both of us and everybody from the Real Ones team, I just want to sincerely thank you guys for tuning in. The folks that I bring on the show, they're family to me, and being able to tell their stories and bringing you into their world is something that I'm just super proud of, and again, grateful that you guys tune in. We've decided we want to take things just a step further. We're going to introduce a Patreon community, and basically what that means is if you become part of this community, look, I already bored Bam Bam. If you want to become a part of this community, you're going to be able to hear episodes early and all that, ad-free and all that good stuff. But there's all this behind-the-scenes footage, all this stuff that we've shot that really brings you into the folks that we've had on the show, really brings you into their world. You're going to be able to do live chats with me and the folks that I bring on the show to talk about their world, talk about the issues that they're dealing with, about their triumphs and their tragedies. Just go to Patreon/RealOnes. This whole idea was something about building bridges and bringing people together and bringing folks that often don't get the mic and giving the mic to them. So the fact that you guys tune in means the world. Anyways, again, thank you. Be good to each other out there. Rock and roll. One of the most defining experiences of my life was living in Moscow for 2 years. It's really where I feel like I became an artist. I got to study at the famous Moscow Art Theater. You know, it was Chekhov's theater, it was Stanislavski's theater. Moscow was completely alive, and you could feel this sense of history that was palpable on the streets because so many of the people that I studied with and learned from, you know, they had grown up under a completely different kind of system. During Soviet times, public gatherings were outlawed. There was no way to get together and to express ideas and to share ideas. The only place really where you could do that was in the theater, in these state-sanctioned theaters. And the art that was made in these theaters had to have a pro-state message. Meyerhold, who was one of the most revered directors in the history of the Moscow Art Theater, and Meyerhold was assassinated by the KGB in his apartment. There's a palpability of this kind of danger that exists on the street of Moscow. The brutality of that city at times really sickened me. I was also overwhelmed by the beauty of the people and the beauty of the spirit and the beauty of the art. It's also given me this sense of such a deep appreciation for this country and how sacred this freedom that we have is. We spoke to one of my very dear friends in Russia. These are dangerous times, and I think that this perspective is unbelievably valuable. I hope you listen with an open heart. And again, this is the perspective of somebody who I consider to be one of the realest ones out there. Man, I love you, man. It's good to see your face.
Love you too, brother. Yeah, great to see you.
I mean, I know there's been so much that's happened since the last time that we spoke. And one of the huge challenges here is just the difference with information and getting clarity. And I'm just wondering, you know, how you are, how you're seeing things. You know, the big news that's reaching us is, you know, because of the pushback in the north, there's this draft that's been instituted. And I'm just wondering, you know, how you can sort of explain the state of things right now.
As you know, the situation changes kind of by the day, if not by the hour. Recently, I just read the news that Putin is going to announce the annexation of all those regions that kind of, you know, voted to join Russia. Well, that's going to be a game changer.
Can you explain why that's going to be a game changer?
Well, he's escalating. He keeps escalating, and the West will have to respond to it somehow. Yet they are in the West, they are saying that this is unacceptable. Nobody's going to accept the fact that those territories belong to Russia. So it's unconstitutional and it's wrong anyway.
And so once Ukrainian soldiers go there, it's as if Russia's being attacked.
Exactly. So the whole idea behind that plan that he has is that this is now Russian territory. And if this territory is attacked by the Ukrainians or with the Western weapons, so it means they are attacking Russia, and Russia have all the legitimate right to respond. And it seems, and many people, more and more people say, those who comment on it, they say that he is looking for a reason to use tactical nuclear weapons.
What do you personally think about that?
Well, he's heading that direction, obviously. I mean, it's not a secret he is sick. It's not a secret that he's, you know, as they say here, with one foot in the deathbed. So he kind of doesn't care. It seems like he wants to drag, if not the whole world, but, you know, couple of countries he wanted to drive to that grave.
When you say there's, it's no secret that he's sick, it's no secret that he's in the deathbed. I understand the reports of his own personal health. The last time we spoke, you talked about so many in Russia supporting the war because of a lack of information and clarity of what's happening. But now you have hundreds of thousands of young men fleeing the country. What is sort of public opinion like these days? Has it shifted massively? Like, are there still many who are very supportive of the war?
Yeah, but listen, we don't know what the public opinion is because, you know, nobody is doing surveys. And nobody is polling people because people are not going to, in this situation, nobody is going to honestly tell you what they really think.
But you being there and knowing people and talking to people.
Yeah, but you know, the people I know, they all of them don't support the war. And actually, many of them fled recently. A couple of my colleagues, they left the country. And a friend of mine just recently, she, with her two children, she was driving up to Latvia to cross the border. Thank God she has an Israeli passport, so she's going to go to Israel through the border. And she said that there's a huge line on the Latvia border of Ukrainians who are trying to enter Europe. So the opinion is that nobody can, you see, this is where I have trouble. You know, people here, they don't have arms, and it seems that that's the only way to stop it is to for the armed people to confront it.
Wow.
People don't have arms. You know, those protesters who go on the rallies, they're immediately taken to jail. They're prosecuted right away and they are mutilated and they can't do anything. I mean, literally, if you go to rally, you have to go there with a baseball bat and you have to fight. Otherwise, it doesn't make any sense there because it's really like a sacrifice for nothing.
I know you know many people who go to those rallies. This is what's happening to them. They're getting mutilated there.
Oh, yeah. Just recently, you know, there was a report. There was this young boy who's like under his 20, I think, and he was reading poetry near the Mayakovsky Monument. You remember that Mayakovsky Square Monument? So he was reading poetry there. So he was arrested. And they raped him with the dumbbell in police station, John. It's like you can't appeal to them saying, you know, stop the war, please don't do it, please don't kill people, because those guys they kind of crossed that line already. So I mean, the situation is such that now it can be stopped only by force. There is no any other way it can be stopped, because it's rolling down the hill. And you know, all these, say, peaceful measures are exhausted. That's why I'm saying, you know, it really does look like ending, because Russia is, let alone, you know, the Ukraine is devastated and so many people are killed and all that, but Russia is ruined completely, completely ruined.
How so? Can you give me examples?
Well, you see, the most of the working men, talented people, they fled the country. Tens of thousands of people are sent to the war to be just slaughtered there because they don't have, and it's, you know, let alone that they go there like sheep sent to a slaughter, and they don't even question why they're sent there and what they're going to do there. It doesn't even cross their mind they're going to be killing peaceful people, civilians. Some of them was asked, will they go there? And they say, yes, we will, because we don't want to be in prison. So for you, it's better to go and kill someone rather than to be in prison. And you know, that's kind of a shift in values. It's beyond, you know, it's beyond, as they say, good and evil. It's out of control.
I mean, historically, I, with all kinds of different, you know, systems of government in place, I feel like Russia has sent so many people to the front lines. I mean, it happened in World War II, yeah? Is this different? Is this...
People, you know, people say, all war experts say that what Russia does, Russia is fighting kind of World War II method, so to speak. You know, they're using all the same tools that they used in World War II. They're just sending as many people as they can to the front line. So nobody cares about people here. You know, they do call them like cannon fodder and send them to the front line. And they think, you know, by doing this in 21st century, So they'll win the war. And they kind of don't understand that now they're facing military equipment that was not available in World War II. Since Ukraine is given this equipment, Ukraine now can kill all of them without even, you know, they say that now they don't even have bullet wounds anymore.
Right, right. It's like people are just being blown up.
Yeah, that's all.
Yeah, I was reading that a nurse was saying that her whole time there, she hasn't seen a single person with a bullet wound.
Yeah, yeah. And recently I saw this video, somebody in one of the Telegram channels, they posted this video where I think it was one of the conscripts who shot this video on his phone and posted it. And this is like a lieutenant, this woman, she's instructing those men who were drafted what they have to have with them, because, you know, the army does not provide them with all the necessary like first aid kits and stuff, so they have to buy it all themselves. And she's saying, buy tampons, buy all these things, because it's very good for the bullet wound. You can stick the tampon in the bullet wound and it'll stop bleeding, you know. She's like instructing them to buy, like tell your family they need to buy it all for you, because we except for the equipment, we're not going to give you anything else. And these guys are going there anyway. I mean, this is mind blowing. And sometimes, you know, you even think, when you think about it, when they show this footage from the rallies in Moscow, you kind of think to yourself, you know, these policemen, you know, fully guarded with all this armor on, they're beating women, they're beating girls, and there is no men there around who would fight for them, who would fight for the girls. And if even there is one guy who would fight for the girls, I mean, nobody is supporting him. There are no other men who would support him.
A policeman in Moscow right now that's doing that, that's beating on a young woman who's protesting, in his heart, do you think he thinks he's doing the right thing, or do you think he's doing what he feels like he has to do? Can you try to explain to me the psychology of that?
I have no idea, John. I mean, this is like, I would say the moment they did that, this is when they lost their humanity. I mean, this is where they lost their psyche, where they lost their anything that, you know, any attributes that a person can be called human. Because this is like beyond anything. When they do it, I have no idea what actually makes them. Maybe they're like instructed or brainwashed in such a way that they're told that the people they're going to be beating on the streets, they're not people.
But in your life right now, being inside Russia, obviously, I'm not interested in where you are specifically, but you're outside of the city, wherever you are you coming across anyone with this kind of pro-war mentality? Can you do is there anyone in your life that you know that
no,
no, nobody
in my circle? I don't know these people, but I you know, sometimes I do see in the place where I am cars driving with this Z letter or V letter of the war. I don't know, I just don't talk to them. It's just, you know, I have no idea what actually moves them to do that. Like, what is their motive for that? I don't know. I have a friend who is a psychiatrist, and she's very old, and she watches Russian TV. Somehow, being a psychiatrist, she's a good woman. Don't get me wrong. She somehow gets this idea that why kind of NATO is trying to not invade, but kind of attack Russia or like harass Russia or whatever. And she's watching these TV programs, TV shows. And I'm like, if you're a psychiatrist and you watch this show, for you, it's almost like a textbook case for psychologically insane people. This is what you're watching. You're supposed to identify it right away and say, oh no, we're not going to watch that. But somehow she, even her professional tools don't work for her. I don't know, John. And that's pretty bad, what's happening. And I think it's just so unprecedented that people don't have any reference point to not even understand, but to make any sense out of what's going on. And again, you can't predict what an insane person will do. And many keep saying that Putin is insane and you shouldn't be. And you know, all those who are around him, they're pretty insane from what they're doing. And, you know, there's no any word of truth of what they're saying. So it seems like the West shouldn't be even considering what they say. because it doesn't mean anything. It's really a time of actions, not talking.
I heard what you said about, you know, the public isn't armed, and you know, it's something we talk about in this country all the time. You know, the right to bear arms. What sort of revolution? What could the public do if it could work perfectly in your mind? What is a potential possible outcome? Is there any chance of revolution? Is there any chance of rising up to effect? Or do you really feel like the protest and the fight is hopeless?
Very hard to say where the breaking point is. Where Russian, like, where is this? Where the pain will be absolutely unbearable, and people will freak out in such a way that they will start fighting back. Right now, what's happening? Some of them, you know, maybe you've heard there, but one of the potential conscripts, he came to the military station and he killed the chief officer of that station.
I heard of that. Yeah.
In many cities, people are burning military stations, those mobilization centers. So things are beginning to happen, but you know, how long and what else should happen for it really to flood the whole country? I don't know. People are very atomized.
They're very
atomized. I mean, they're very, you know what I mean? Like they're separated. They're like, it's people don't trust each other in many ways. And those who do, they're not violent. You know, they're not your type. You know what I mean? It's like when you tell your stories, when something goes like wrong for you and, you know, somebody's offending your family and whatever, you don't think twice. You just hit them in the face. And in this case, it's the only solution, frankly. And those people who can do that, I mean, they begin to talk to those bullies. But it's not the way. It's really a time of baseball bat. It's not a time of talking. And that's why it's so sad to see, you know, when people go to the streets, these girls, these students, you know, these intelligentsia guys, and when you watch that, and it's like, if I could fight, you know, I would go and fight. I know that there's no much use of me, you know, with my complexion.
I'm just wondering, is there any hope, man, of these same police officers who are going and beating people in the street? This, for lack of a better word, this warrior class. Is there any example, or is there any
role
of them?
No, John. There is no one single officer in the whole army. I got to tell you, in the Russian penal code, there is an article that says there is a punishment for waging a war in another country. There is an article in a penal code for that. If you are conspiring a war, if you're waging a war, if you're instigating a war in a different country, so this and that, there is a punishment of whatever, this many years in prison. So they don't even understand that they're criminals, even according to the law that exists now in Russia, you know, let alone that no laws work anymore.
But look, man, maybe it's impossible for you to answer, but you spoke of people who are going because they're sheep. The last time we talked about it, people are being promised a flat screen TV, so they go and they fight. And now that you're talking about this other group of people who are being told, if you don't go fight, you got to go do 10 years in prison, and then they go fight anyway. I would imagine the people that are going to fight because they don't want to go to prison, their hearts are clearly not in that fight. You know, of the Russian military fighting right now, how many of the people really do not want to be there? Do you have any sense of that?
I don't think that anybody wants to be there. There is a very small group of people who really want to go there and fight because they don't understand this war is not a toy. It's not a game. But all the others, they go just because they're told to go. And now, you know, Ukrainian government, they announced like a program. So if you surrender peacefully and give your information to the Ukrainian office, so you're not going to be killed and you will be taken as a prisoner according to the Geneva Convention. And many people kind of rely on that. But the problem is, and as we talked, so it's not a gun war anymore. It's a rocket war. So you may not even get to the front line and you will be killed. They'll blow you up even before you arrive there. So, and they don't even understand that. So now what do they say? So they're going to be waiting for more coffins come back to Russia from the front line, and maybe then people begin to think that they need to change something. It's surreal, John. It's surreal. There is no answers. Everybody who is, I've listened to so many analysts, and they're like trying to make sense out of what's going on, and they can't. They kind of come up with different scenarios and trying to see what may happen, but you can't.
Is there anybody, any leader of opposition to what's going on?
All opposition leaders, they're pushed out of the country. There is none of them left. You know, the last one, I think he left today. He spent 2 weeks in prison. He's 72 and he got sick. So they let him out and he's going to leave the country because he needs a kidney operation. So I don't think so. And right now they literally beheaded the opposition. There are no leaders now who can do anything, who can, you know, bring people together.
I mean, I even saw when I was there at a time that there was nothing like this, that, you know, people in power, there's a real, the line between fear and respect is very thin. I'm wondering, like, even when you go to the store, when you go, you know, to buy milk, you know, if you're having a conversation with a friend or a family member, are you careful about what you say? Are people talking about this to each other in public? What is the general feeling like, you know, out in the streets when you go into town?
In town, you know, people keep their head down. They don't talk because you don't know, you know, whom you're going to be talking to, who's going to listen to you. And maybe they report on you right away as soon as you're out of the subway. You don't know that. And another thing is that, yes, people do talk about it in the stores, but, you know, recently, but not in kind of, how to put it, not in a negative way, not criticizing the authorities. Just recently, I was in the store and there was this girl who works in the store and the guy, the hands of the store, and they talked to each other. And the guy was telling her how he went to the military office and how they did the medical exam on him and how inappropriate things were and how the whole thing was improperly organized and they don't know what they're doing and all that. But yet he wasn't saying that he's not going to go. He was saying that, you know, the thing is improperly organized, but it seemed that if he's given the order, he'll go. And the weird thing is that these are the young people. It's like in their 20s. And you would think, you know, everything that you've experienced in your life and everything you have in your life, and now all of it is taken away from you. How that you're going to go and give your life for something that is taken away from you, everything you have. It's like, you know, people think that if you understand, you would know what to do with it. But the thing is that here, there is nothing to understand because it's just so purely evil that all you need to do, you need to respond and you need to counteract it. This is all you have left to do. It's not a time of understanding and trying to get in somebody's shoes and see the world through their eyes. You're not going to see that world because the world they see doesn't exist. It's a diabolic fantasy. This is the world that they live in.
And so you feel like when you say this is the end, you feel what? I mean, you know, I know he made these nuclear threats.
It's coming to this. I mean, he's trying to escalate the situation to the point when he will say that they were made to use the nuclear weapons. And, you know, it's weird, you know, somebody already said that, you know, if it was any other country that would break the law, and actually Soviet Union, when they waged because, you know, Soviet Union was a part of waging World War II together with Hitler. This is something that, you know, was completely crossed out from the Russian history. So generations learned that, you know, this is Hitler who attacked Russia, and poor Russia was, you know, fighting back. But nobody knows that in 1939, there were two powers that actually started the whole war. And Soviet Union was part of it. So the Soviet Union, when they waged the war, the Soviet Union was expelled from the League of Nations. So it seems that now all the other countries, they're failing to expel Russia from the League of Nations for waging the war. And many people talk about it. So why would you keep this country in the League of in the UN when the country is simply trying to destroy the world?
It seems so crazy to even ask you this, but what is the general sentiment towards nuclear weapons?
If you listen to Russian propaganda, if you listen to the Russian TV, they literally repeat Putin's words when they say they go to hell and will go to heavens.
Wow.
Literally, John, they literally repeat it every time they have a show. There is this woman who is the chief executive of Russia Today, and she keeps saying that.
There's a faction in your country right now that welcome that option.
So they think about themselves as if they're doing something It's like a holy war. It's unreal. It's hard to believe it's happening, but it's happening. It seems that, you know, the leaders in the West, they can't quite get their head around that this is actually happening. But the thing is, you know, if you look back and if you try to analyze what was happening for all these 22 years, then you will realize that this monster was fed by the West.
How so?
Because, you know, when he came into power in 2000, you know, he was immediately brought in the club of all these nations. And the thing is, you know, that Garry Kasparov, this chess champion, this chess master, he keeps talking about it all the time. And he said, you know, you blame Russians. And of course, Russian people, they have their portion of blame. That's like no question. But listen, who actually made a great PR for the guy? That's the West. You were shaking hands with him. You were like making hugs. You were like making deals. You were trading with him after everything he did, after everything new. Even before he came in power. Because, you know, all these frauds that he committed when he was the deputy head of St. Petersburg mayor, there was a whole case against him.
What was the case?
He was a part of this agreement between the St. Petersburg government and some of the Western companies. And it was called Food for Raw Materials or something like that, if I'm not mistaken. It's like they were given raw materials to the West, and the West was bringing food to the city. So somehow they played it in such a way that the West got the raw materials, but the city never got the food, and he got the fruits of it. And there was this deputy of St. Petersburg Parliament. She was leading this case, and it was all over the newspapers. And I think, what I'm trying to say is that I'm sure that any intelligence agency in any country, when a new leader comes in a country that was your foe, I'm sure that you will run a background check of that guy, you know, big time. And I'm sure that they knew who is in power now in Russia. Or they did. Did they do anything about it? They welcomed him. And that's the result of it. And he was spitting in their face every time he has this chance. Every time he was doing it. And the West was just wiping it off. And just saying, you know, it's okay, that's just their thing, but this is just business, you know, we just do business, it's just real politics. So that's what we do.
What could the West have done? I mean, I know there's Crimea, but before all of that, I mean, what would you have had us do? What should we have done?
Yeah, but immediately when, you know, when there was, when he started strangling Russian media and it closing TV channels, crushing businesses, that Russian businessman, that guy that was unfairly put in prison. So the West, as the fighter for human rights, you would put sanctions in place right away. Mm-hmm. You would stop trading. Like everything that the West is doing now, when the time long ago passed, should have been done 20 years before. Then we wouldn't have that. Hmm.
Can you tell me a little bit about this mass exodus now of men fleeing the draft? I mean, I imagine so many families are being split apart. So many men are having to leave their families. Do you think the majority of these men who are leaving for philosophical reasons, or they're leaving for safety reasons, or both?
Safety, yes. Philosophical, yes. Because people don't want to go and kill other people, and they don't know how to avoid the draft. Well, as for me, you know, I'm trying to prepare myself. So if the time comes, and if I'm found, so I'm going to go to prison.
If you're found right now.
Yeah, exactly.
Because of your dissension?
Because I'm not going to go to fight. And I was born in Ukraine, John, you know? I'm sure they know it. I was talking to my uncle the other day, the day before yesterday. I was talking to him on the phone. So a rocket blew a restaurant in the park nearby where they live. Russian rocket. It's just so fucked up. I mean, it's right now they say that, you know, the West kind of slowed down the shipments of weapons to Ukraine, and they kind of started thinking, you know, maybe we should slow down, maybe we need to get to the negotiation table and see what can be done with this and all that. They think, you know, more and more voices like that, they start popping up. But that's wrong. I mean, this thing should be stopped for good. And if, and again, as I told you back then when we had this conversation a few months ago, like if there is a need to obliterate this country, that's what should be done. And I'm willing to sacrifice to make this sacrifice, because it just cannot go on like this.
I mean, there must be a huge population of Russians who feel the same way you do.
Yes, they do, and they feel ashamed. And you know, my friend who was going to Latvian border to flee the country, she was driving there with her two girls. One of them is 9, the other one is like 12. And she said to me, when they're driving along that huge line of cars, Ukrainian cars, there, her girls started crying and saying how ashamed they are for what's happening. Those two little girls, I mean, they're going to remember it for the rest of their life. And that's and again, you know, in old people, they're so devastated because they feel helpless. They can't do anything about it. I mean, all you can do, you just can't go, you know, you go to the street, you get beaten up, put in prison, and that's, you know, it ends there and it doesn't change a thing. It doesn't even put a dent in the fucking monster. Because again, as I told you, it needs force. Those guys understand only force. They need a good beating, and such a beating that they wouldn't stand up again. That's what they need.
Are you gonna leave?
I can't. Because you know, my girls are here and they can go anywhere and I can't leave them. So whatever it takes, I'm gonna be here. It's just so, you know, we talk about it every night and it's kind of a reason to release this team, but it's just so epic. I mean, everything that's happening. It seems like, you know, the time came when everybody has to make a decision for themselves. What is your true value in life? And I think it's not only choice for Russians. I mean, it's a choice that everybody's making right now in every country. When I was talking to my uncle, he told me that, you know, this war, like being in Ukraine, and, you know, he always complained about, you know, how difficult they live there, you know, how unfair the government is and many other things. He's 80 something. He's like 82, I think. And now he said, you know, things changed, people changed because of the war. They became more supportive. They became more human in a sense. You know, they now support each other. They now, you know, they root for each other. This is what happened to Ukraine. It's now a completely different country. That's very true, you know, no matter how it may sound, but, you know, in some way, this war kind of made Ukrainian nation rise. And it made Russian nation now is in shit, in shambles, completely. Completely destroyed. Former Russian deputy prime minister, who was a prime minister, deputy prime minister in 1997, he's living in Germany now, and he said that he's absolutely sure that it will. This war will end. Putin will end, you know, this Russia that exists today. But he said, you know, no matter who's going to come after, he said, I have no idea how they're going to clean that shit. It just now, right now, it looks insurmountable.
What are you most afraid of now?
I don't know. I think we're beyond that. I mean, I am scared, but, you know, in that scale of events, it kind of doesn't matter. Words don't help anymore. It's like it's really a time of action. And no matter how it sounds, it seems that, you know, the Western people, they kind of have to wake up and they have to do everything in their power to make it happen, to make their governments to help Ukraine in such a way that it'll win the war. Somebody said that, you know, for Russia to rise, we need to defeat Russia. Nothing will grow here ever. And China is sitting there and waiting. The whole policy that the West was pushing over these years completely failed on all fronts. And China is just another example of it. When they were pushing this agenda that if we give China and, you know, and Russia all these economic opportunities, they'll see how more efficient capitalism is and how more efficient this type of economy is, and they will give up on their former agenda. And they will accept ours, and this is how we bring them on our side. No way. They actually used the West to push their agenda even more. And it seems that, you know, the West is beginning to understand it, just barely beginning to understand it right now.
Would you say what the West should do now, and the West, and that Russia needs to be, this Russia needs to be crushed, to be defeated? How would we do that?
Oh, it's a question to politicians. I mean, what tools they have right now in their hands to do that? Because, I mean, the longer they wait, the worse the outcome will be. No matter what you do, he will do whatever he likes without taking you into consideration. So why would you take his wishes into consideration? Somebody said today that how come that you gave this decision of how the world will be in the future, how come you gave it to the insane guy? Why don't you want to decide it yourself how it's going to be?
The last time we spoke, you talked about the lack of information, or the propaganda that's being spoon-fed into everyone. You know, right now, if I were to walk down the streets of Moscow, how different is it from a few months ago?
I mean, nobody speaks out loud anything on the street. I mean, nobody does that. People keep their opinion to themselves. And, you know, those only speak up, those of the older age, like over 50, 60, those who have no threat that they're going to be taken. So they say things more outrageous. But, I mean, it just doesn't mean anything. It doesn't change anything. It's went way too far, you know. And it went way too far 8 years ago when the Crimea was annexed and when the Georgia was attacked in 2008 and the West was still playing games. Everybody is to blame. Everybody made their contribution to the situation. Hmm. That's just, you know, when you look at it, you know, if you kind of look from the above on the whole situation, then you begin to realize that it's not really about money or anything. It's just it's more on the value level, you know. The value that people used to fight for are not valued anymore. And that's why we are where we are. And I guess, you know, I guess this whole thing is kind of meant to bring us back on the track in such a painful way. And if not, then, you know, why would this planet would need us then? It would be better without us. Seriously. You know, as they keep saying, you know, if all insects disappear on this planet, life will end in 15 years. If all humans disappear from the planet, the life will return to the planet in 50 years. The planet will completely restore itself. You know, sadly, but it's very true. We're just so deep in shit, like all of us. And, you know, this war really like a litmus test.
Do you have like a personal plan if you get called to fight or no?
Oh, no plans. I mean, we just live by day and see what happens. When, you know, when it comes, we'll see what to do. I mean, it's useless. Seriously, nothing can be planned now. Things change by the hour, literally. I had a call right before you. I was supposed to have a call. And, you know, the last minute, they just canceled it, you know, after mobilization was announced. Because, you know, all their men, the people that I was supposed to talk to, now they have to figure out how they're going to live and how the company will go on. And probably it won't. And many companies won't. Because, you know, all those men, they had to flee or they had, or they're conscripted. Everybody's on their own right now. Mm. But somehow, you know, with a broken heart, we have to go on. Because, you know, it will pass. It will pass. Eventually, it'll all be over. The only question is, you know, how are we gonna sail through this, and with what we're gonna leave it? Strength and honor, brother. You know.
I love you, man. It's such a sad time.
Very sad. So many people are now praying for this shit bag to be gone.
Yeah. Okay, man. Well.
Yeah, brother. Seriously, I don't really know what else to say because it's yeah. Really, I'm pretty wordless, I have to tell you. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great to see you, brother.
Always.
We will rise, you know. We just need to be strong to go through this and do everything in our power to help those who are really fighting it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, man. All right, stay strong.
Yeah. Okay, thank you, brother. All the best to your family. Love you, man.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.